God has a plan. God knows what we need before we even know that we need it. God will take care of us. He knows what he's doing. He has it all planned out. He will do what's best for us even when it doesn't feel like it to us at the time. Often when our souls are troubled and problems abound, we tend to pray prayers such as, God, fix this situation so I won't have to suffer or have problems. Make everything go smoothly in my life. Please remove the obstacles I'm facing today. But how can I trust God in the darkest of times when it seems like nothing is ever going to get better? When the chaos and unknown circumstances keep piling up higher and higher? How can I trust God if I don't know what the plan is? If I don't know what the outcome's going to be? I'm a planner. I like to be prepared. I like to know what's coming at me or what's going to happen next. But we don't always get to know that in life. I can plan what I'm going to eat for breakfast or what time I'm going to get up in the morning, but I can't know what unforeseen event might happen to me or a loved one in the coming week. This is a little bit of my story, but really it's not my story. It's my perspective on a very important woman in my life who went through difficult trials, doctor's appointments after doctor's appointments, many tears, a lot of anger, but somehow she trusted God through it all. She never gave up. And she ultimately believed that all this had happened to her for a reason, for a purpose, that God had a purpose for her and that God had a plan all along. This woman is my mom, Beverly. And I have to tell her story because she's not here anymore to tell it herself. My mom and I are very similar. She liked to know what was going to happen next. She liked to have a plan. She was always the best planner for her family vacations because she always had a detailed packing list and a planned out agenda. And she always overpacked just in case we needed something. She never let me leave the house without kitty litter and diapers in my car, just in case I got stuck on the snow and ice or I was in a car wreck and couldn't stop the bleeding. I could use the diaper. If you know me well, obviously you can tell that she passed those traits on to me, the ultimate planner of all things. So let's go back in time to 1996. Oops, did it skip one? Oh, that was right. That was right. Okay. I was just 4 years old. My mom was 30. My mom had a home daycare that was in its third year running. I was lucky to always have her at home with me when I wasn't in school. My mom had went in for some tests for another medical reason, and her MRI showed a grade 1 astrocytoma in her brain. The tumor was removed through surgery and radiation. Life continued as normal. The only difference to me as a small child was that her hair was gone and she had a huge scar on her head and now she wore a wig or sometimes a ball cap anywhere we went. Nothing to fear, right? So life continued as normal from 96 to 2006. Fast forward 11 years to 2007. I was 15 and my mom was 41. My first memories of noticing that things weren't right with her was an instance in which I asked her to record a TV show for me on VHS tape, believe it or not. And when I got home from school to check the tape, it's as if she had never used a VCR in her life. I was so upset. She completely messed it up, and I thought that she had gone crazy. She also began having problems typing. Mom said she thought the keyboard was broken. She also started getting headaches. Her annual MRI was scheduled for June, but she went to the ER on May 19th because she felt tingles in her left arm 2 days in a row. I remember I left school early to go to Wichita to see her in the hospital. The MRI showed the brain tumor was back, except this one was a grade 4 glioblastoma. Chemo wafers were placed at the tumor site, then she had cyberknife radiation. Her left hand function returned to normal. Once again, all seems well, right? Well, to better explain the events that happened, I found a document on her computer that was titled My Purpose. It has dates from 2007 to 2011, which were some of the worst times of her life, and also for Dad and I as her caretakers. March 2008, the tumor starts growing. I lose peripheral vision on my left side. So she starts bumping into anything on her left side because she can't see it. Slowly, I start to lose mobility of my left leg and arm. July 2008, I start having seizures. But then the chemotherapy is started and the seizures stop. And for me, my days as a caretaker at 16 were filled with driving her around to all of her appointments, helping her change the fluids in her port, and just being a normal, angsty teenager. In 2009, she writes, "We went to see Dr. Aronson, a neuro-oncologist in Denver, to see if he could help with my brain tumor. He looked at the MRI and said there was no tumor there." What? No tumor? God had released me from my death sentence. I was flying high. I had watched several stars on Oprah who said their illnesses and cancers were gifts because they were able to help other people through their illnesses. I felt like my tumor was a gift too. All of a sudden, I could read and understand the Bible like never before. I could also talk to God and actually hear him talk to me. It was a great time to be alive. Then in August, she writes, "Trouble begins. All of a sudden, I start walking like a weeble wobble, and I get a walker, which becomes my new best friend. Unfortunately, I have to give up my passion, taking care of little kids, and I close the daycare in 2010. She also wrote that she gave up on cooking and cleaning. She gave up on everything except using her right hand to type on the computer. Summer of 2010, I had just graduated high school. She writes, "I know God has a purpose for me. He healed me of a terminal brain tumor for a reason, and it is not to sit at home every day and not be able to do anything. So I wait for him to reveal that purpose. It is very, very difficult to bear this burden of disability. I cry out to God daily, why me?" In October, she says, "I learn about a chiropractic neurologist in Colorado Springs who can help retrain the brain. I know without a doubt that this is an answer to my prayers for healing so that I can do whatever it is that God has for me to do." In March 2011, she writes, "I saw the doctor at Christmas time and he expected to see at least a 5% improvement on my left side. I began doing eye and balance exercises. They have helped tremendously. My balance has returned, and I can walk without the walker when I have something to catch myself on. God is healing me. He chooses how and when. I still wait to see what God has planned for me to do. I'm able to walk at home with or without anything to hold on to. I learned how to use a cane. I still pray for complete healing." In June of 2011, she writes, "Deep, deep despair. I sit at home with nothing to do, nowhere to go, and no friends to talk to. I still cry out to God daily. He has deserted me. I am alone. Why am I here?" She shared in small group about her deep, deep despair, and they prayed with her. And she writes later, "God is back. I can hear his voice again." I don't have all the details from 2011 to 2015, but here's what I do know. Mom tried her hardest to persevere and not sit at home all day doing nothing. She began scanning family slides and created decade-long family trees and history of both sides of the family, hers and Dad's. She had a passion for genealogy. That was one of the greatest gifts that she could have left us. I would never have had the patience or time to sit and do all of what she did, but that's what God gave her, the gift of time, lots of time at home. She opened a business to transfer slides to digital for families, and she never gave up, even when she felt like she was being imprisoned, lonely, and had no one to talk to, and even when she was stripped of all of her independence at just age 45. She had a couple good days, but they were mostly bad. She often felt like a burden to me and my dad, always apologizing for even asking for help. She tried to persevere through all that life threw at her, but it was just so hard from what I could tell. So fast forward to 2014. Dad's work in Wichita were closing the offices there, and they offered him a relocation to the offices here in Springs. It didn't take long for him and Mom to decide that they were ready to move back to Colorado Springs after 26 years, and I had decided to move with them. Before we moved, in August, we took one last family vacation. None of us knew it would be our last, but what a gift it was. We went to the Arches, Maroon Bells, Mesa Verde, Glenwood Springs, Marble, Black Canyon of the Gunnison. Mom couldn't hike anywhere with us, which always hurt my heart to leave her behind, but she had the time of her life. She loved camping and traveling. The whole trip was a type of coming home for her. One last hurrah. It's as if she knew what was to come in the next 8 months. We moved in February of 2015. Mom was so excited to be back home. At the end of March, only 7 weeks of living here, Mom had a bad fall in the middle of the night. Dad takes her to the hospital here in town, and they decide to move her to Denver via a Flight for Life helicopter. When I went to visit her, she responded very little, but I could tell she understood me. They had found no growth of the initial tumor, but instead it was slowly creeping into the lining of her brain and her brainstem. There was no cure this time. This was the end of the journey. When her doctor came in to tell the news, you could tell on her face that she understood what was going on, as she anticipated that this day would eventually arrive. We began looking at homes to take her to, thinking that this might be long and maybe she had a chance to recover. I kept praying for the better outcome. There were days when things looked better, when she looked like she was improving. I kept praying for a miracle, as she often did. But then they said we should start looking at hospice options instead. She spent 2 weeks in Denver and then 2 weeks here in Springs on hospice. Her entire family, her parents, her three brothers and one sister, along with many of her cousins, were able to come and say goodbye to her. I still can't believe that maybe the reason we moved here at the right time was so she could be with her family. She passed away on April 23rd, 2015, beside her brothers. So there's no happy ending to this story, except that she doesn't have to suffer anymore on Earth. There's no obvious end to the exile that I can tell, at least here on Earth. She prayed and prayed for God to heal her and for Him to use her for His purpose. And I wish I could have known the conversations that she had with God about all that. I'm sure she could have told you what God used her for and what her ultimate purpose here on Earth was, even if it was short. The only wonderful thing about the ending to the story is that she got to be here in Colorado with her family, back where she belonged. I may never know why all of this happened the way it did. I may never understand why God had it planned out like that. But I know that I can trust Him with all that has happened. And I can trust Him for what the future holds. Maybe the point of it all is for me to just learn to trust God. Or maybe the point of it all is just to share my story so someone else can relate and understand that even through the worst of darkness and exiles, God will bring you through it just like He said He would. He will not leave you. I'll end with an excerpt from the devotional Mom read on May 22nd, 2007. It was really important to her. God, may my highest motivation and desire be that your name would be glorified in every trial and situation I go through. Keep my mind and heart focused on Jesus' example and committed to what you want to accomplish in my life. Holy Spirit, please give me the grace to live wholeheartedly for the glory of God's name. And from John chapter 12, 27 through 28. Right now I am storm-tossed. And what am I going to say? Father, get me out of this? No, this is why I came in the first place. I'll say, Father, put your glory on display.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
Thank you, Lauren, for sharing your story with us. When I asked you to do this last week, did I say the word plan? Did I mention that when I was talking to you? I don't think I did, and I just thought it was so interesting that you said God has a plan. That's the first thing you said, because that's kind of what I'm going to talk about today, but I didn't really have a plan for this Sunday. last Wednesday, I was sitting in my room, and I was feeling like I could use a little bit of God's goodness, the theme for today. I was thinking, So it was the third day in a row that I had gotten off work, and I was sitting staring at my computer looking at the directories thinking, who am I going to ask to speak on November 28th? And this is kind of a familiar feeling. If anyone doesn't know, I've been planning guest speakers. I'm on the worship planning committee here, and I've been planning guest speakers for the last year. And I think the first couple months I did it, I really like thought ahead. Like I got somebody like a month in advance, and as time has gone on, I've really just been pushing the envelope more and more with doing everything last minute. I'm kind of a procrastinator. Sorry, Shelby. Really. And so I've just been, but it, as you all know, we've had guest speakers every month this year, and it's somebody always just materializes. I always find somebody somehow. So it's kind of turned into this daily bread kind of thing where God has a plan, apparently, because we always find somebody. And it's been a good exercise in dependence on God to be part of the worship planning committee, because I'm really always flying by the seat of my pants. So my story for today is kind of how I learned where that started in my life, I guess, where I started doing that. And I think it sometimes kind of stresses me out, but I just always have this feeling that, yeah, God does have a plan and this will figure itself out. So when I graduated college, probably 2014, when you're graduating, everyone always asks, what are you going to do? It's just like the huge question for like months of your life. What are you going to do? You're graduating. And I had this plan. I knew that I wanted to go overseas. And I eventually found out about this program that was going to Congo. And at some point, I just sort of decided, I think this is, and there were some other opportunities, but I just decided this is the thing that I want to do. And then it ended up getting pushed back. So I was telling everyone, yeah, I'm applying to this program. I'm going to try and get into this program. I'm going to try and go to this thing in Congo. But it wasn't until the November, right? So I graduated in April, and it wasn't until the November afterward. It had been pushed back a number of times, and that was when it was starting. And so I ended up living in Nashville. I was working as a painter. I was playing in a band and just kind of studying French and waiting for this thing to materialize. And I applied to it, and I waited for a long time. And probably about September, I had sent multiple emails, hey, I really want to be in this, studying French. Probably about September, I got an email that said, we are narrowing down the number of candidates. We're moving on to a second round of interviews, and you did not make the cut. Which was this weird feeling for me. Like, I really thought that I was supposed to do this. And so I got this email, and then I'm kind of trying to figure out what am I going to do. And I was probably about a week later, I even remember the house I was in when this happened. I was working as a painter, and you know, when you're painting, you have a lot of time for your brain to just kind of absorb and sit in the background. And I had this realization that I should just try a little bit harder. So I stopped right there, put down the painter. I'm a total slacker. I just put down my brush right there. Started typing on my phone, sent an email that said, hey, I'm still interested. I'd love to have another opportunity if you're still doing interviews. Sent that email, never heard anything. Probably for a month or, that was in September, I think. So I had just kind of given up on that. I just kind of decided, all right, I was wrong. This wasn't meant to be. I started thinking about moving to China and teaching English there, because I was really set on this idea that I needed to go overseas and just learn to live in another culture and understand. And I think it was towards the end of November, almost 2 months later, I had made all these plans. I had done some interviews with people in China about teaching English there, and I get an email back that says, hey, we actually do want you to go. We're still looking for people, so if you're interested, we can. And so, from the Congo people, from MCC, and so I ended up I applied and got in and went to Congo. And it was just a strange, and so I ended up going to Congo, and as we all know, sometimes when God does show his goodness, it's not always what we expected, right? Life never goes how we planned, and I think there was a point where I got to Congo and I thought, man, what did I get myself into, and why did I want to come to this country so badly? Because it's really kind of a crazy. But I had all these fascinating times there, and I was there for probably a year and a half, and I just got really tired. Part of the reason I had originally wanted to go there was because, as a Mennonite, I had read about some of the work that was going on there, and I was just fascinated by this idea of working for peace in this country that's so war-torn. And so that work hadn't really gone how I expected it to. I had worked for this organization for a while, and there was a lot of money and complication involved in that, and it all kind of fell apart. And I started just teaching English to these kids, and I was teaching English, but it was really just trying to help them understand what I believe was sort of a central thing, which is this idea that the world is so open, and God does have a plan, and you really, there's just so little hope in this country because they really believe the only way to move forward in life is to get out of Congo. And so that was always such a central part of my mission there, was just to try and give people faith that God does have a plan for this country, and if you believe and if you try to work with God, things can change. But anyway, I was just so exhausted, year and a half, 2 years in, and I was so excited to come home. I had had my adventure, and I had seen and done all this thing, and it hadn't really gone how I wanted, and I had never really had the job that I wanted, but I was so ready to come home. And then the country rep, Claire Good, he comes to me about 2 months before I was going to leave. I again remember the exact spot where I was standing on this deck outside of a Mennonite church where I was teaching English. And he says, we actually want you to come back. We actually have this other job for you. And it was exactly the job that I had always imagined the whole time. It was this job working with partners all across the country on all these different peace initiatives that our different partners were doing. So it was just this funny, bittersweet moment of this job that I always wanted, and I just so badly wanted to not do it. And so I said, I don't know, and I did what I'm very good at, as I've described earlier, which is procrastinate. And I just waited, and I really believed that God wanted me to do this, and it just seemed like it would be crazy for me to say no, because it was something that I had wanted to do, but I was just so tired, and I just really didn't want to do it at all. I just wanted to say no so badly. And it got to the last possible, it was literally like a couple hours before I was getting on a plane. And I finally just sent an email that said, like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I was going on a vacation then to Ethiopia at that time. And so I kind of knew in the back of my mind, I probably have about a week that I could send another email and say, never mind, forget about it. And so I went on that vacation, and I was in Ethiopia with my friend Abby, who went to Goshen College with me, and some other friends that lived here in the States. And I was there, and it was a great time. And then there was this one Sunday night. The next day, we were going to leave on this road trip to go into southern Ethiopia for probably a week. And there's no all the internet that you get in Africa is through your cell phone. And the actual, you know, there's your cell signal, and on top of that, there's the 3G or 4G network that you have to connect to the internet. And that was not going to be there. So I knew that I wasn't going to have internet access for like a week. And so I really knew, If I'm gonna back out, in the pit of my stomach, I really still wanted to do that. But I knew this is the night that I have to back out. And so I said, you know, I asked God, you know, if you really want me to do this, like, can you give me a sign? And I actually got two signs, so I really felt lucky there. The first sign was simple, but it made sense. We were going, and my friend Abby, his sister was coming to the United States to work at the World Bank. She had a job there at the World Bank in Ethiopia, and so we drove to the airport, and we dropped her off. And then when we were driving home, I don't remember why, but somebody put this song on the radio, this old song, "Children go where I send thee, how shall I send thee? I'm gonna send thee one by one." If y'all know that. It just seemed really coincidental, and it was at this exact moment when it was in my head about what am I going to do, and it just felt like a sign that God would go with. You know, my friends aren't like overly religious; they're not like playing Christian music in the car all the time. I just don't know why they put that song on, but it seemed too coincidental. And then we got back to Abby's house, and we were just sitting around talking, and he started telling the story of how his sister had ended up going to Washington D.C. to work at this to work at the office there for the World Bank. And he just started to tell, you know, Abby had gone to the United States, he had lived there, he was very fortunate, and then he had gone back to Ethiopia because he decided he wanted to go back to Ethiopia after being gone for so long and live there and try and try and be part of that country. And I think his sister was a little bit older, and she had wanted to come to the United States for so long. I would guess that there was probably a bit of a jealousy there of, why does my brother get to go? And like, other people in their family had gone abroad, and I don't think we can ever fully understand what it means to come to the U.S. as people who are born here. Like, I think it's just such an incredible opportunity. So she had wanted to come here for so long, and he just told this long story of how she had struggled, and she had done all of these things, and she had actually at one point thought about marrying somebody in the U.S., and she had done the green card lottery and all this stuff. And finally, she had just given up. She said, I guess I'm supposed to be here. I have this great job in Ethiopia. I guess God wants me to be here. She finally just gave up, much like I did. I gave up, you know, when I thought I was supposed to Congo. She gave up, and then one day, a letter comes across her desk. Hey, we want you to come work at the office in Washington, D.C. And I just thought it was just strange to me seeing this pattern again and again in my life, that we have these things that we believe God wants us to do, we have these things that we want, and we struggle, and we do what we can, and we in the end, it's just given to us. It's a gift. It's not something that we were able to make happen on our own. I'm certainly not here today to say that you're gonna get everything you want, and that God is just gonna make everything perfect. As Lauren's story showed, sometimes we don't get everything. But I've just come to believe in my life through this cycle over and over again that we can. Every time you feel that feeling in your stomach, I felt it earlier this week about, man, how is this Sunday gonna go, and how is this talk gonna go? But I just have come to believe again and again that we do receive these gifts from God all the time, and that you're certainly, it's not guaranteed and you're not entitled to it, but if you work hard and you be nice to people and you do your best, God will provide. Your daily bread will definitely be there. So, that's God's goodness in my life. I picked this song that we're going to do here because this was a song that has always sort of stuck with me in that journey. I used to sing it with my English students. We would sing songs in English to try and help them learn, and I would always sing this song with them, and it was always a good reminder for me that in this journey, God is with us, and He does give us these gifts along the way.